epidermis. Like, it wasn't even a real causative agent. So, like, I just, again, it kind of makes you wonder. Now, we do see it's not super uncommon to have lesions in the place where we've had bone plates, but those were usually osteosarcomas, and this wasn't. And so, that, you know, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, it's osteo, but it was like, oh, it's not osteosarc. So that was, I mean, yes, we did the steps correctly. I guess the test results that we got didn't match with what was going on with the patient. And I guess in my mind, that would have been like, hey, do we do something else? Do we just rely on the culture, or do we do some sort of biopsy? I guess is where my mind went. I mean, it's a tough case. This is not what anybody would have expected, because even, not that I'm an orthopedic by any stretch, but I would have been like, ooh, this sounds like this could be an osteosarc, and it that wasn't. You know, it was a different type of aggressive cancer. So,
to add on to that, not only did the culture not actually grow what you would expect for this type, but it also wasn't improving. And I was looking at the dates, it's like we have 5 weeks going between when an implant was removed, and you have the swelling, and you have them on Clavamox, and then it's not until 5 weeks later that we're doing another aspirate. And I just, the timing of, for a dog, that the tests aren't coming back how you expect, you're not getting improvement. It makes me go, should we have checked something before these 5 week intervals? And both of the intervals that I can find were like 5 weeks apart. It was like,
I could add to that, I've dealt with several of these, and it's very unusual to go 4 or 5 years when you have a problem, but it can happen. I agree with what's being said in the vein of it not appearing as a typical infection type problem. You usually either have a sequester, or you have, which is a piece of necrotic bone in the center of the repair of the healing part of it, or you have lysis around the bone screws. These are the things you look for with infection regarding a plate and screws. And then when you add the culture and sensitivity results into it, I agree this was not following the usual path of infection. And it turned out to be an adenocarcinoma, which I have never heard of, in a bone. It didn't look like osteosarcoma on the radiographs either, especially time period. We would have seen lysis or proliferation. Adenocarcinoma is extremely unusual, so I agree there was probably some alarm bells going off here. And the patient needed to come back, and maybe we look at this bone a little differently now in terms of infection. They seem to just keep going down the infection route. This is hindsight. Then we have an adenocarcinoma, which nobody expected. So in that case, you can't say, well, they missed an adenocarcinoma. You can't say that. So my problem with this case is, when things weren't going well, this patient should have somehow got back in for evaluation sooner. And so,
but what do you do at that point? The culture was done, and some skin surface contaminant was found, which is not uncommon for these implants. And usually, it is going to be skin surface bacteria. Every implant culture I've ever seen has always been
usually
staph external. Yeah. So we had a staph species.
But a few, right? If we've got an infection, that's
not responsible. Well, we also had an antibiotic that was on there, so that could impede some of the growth, too. So, I mean, I agree with you, hindsight, but when you're Google, was this a wrong procedure? I don't see that was a wrong stepwise passion. And that's where I'm at, is when I look and say, okay, adenocarcinoma, yeah, we could have gotten them a biopsy, we could have done this. Honestly, when you biopsy a lot of bone cancer, you're not going to find anything. So we still could have come up with a negative culture. So there's a lot of ifs when we look at it from the back. I do agree, but I don't see a violation. It sounds like you guys have questions, but does it sound like nobody sees a violation? I mean, I agree, this is a bummer of a case, but do we see a statute violation?
Right, and I agree with you. Like, this, it's frustrating as the owner, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, your pet, you see your pet go through this, you're going through it, right, trying to get them back and forth to appointments and whatnot, but, I mean, at the end of the day, the steps were taken, we just didn't get to the results that we wanted to. I mean,
which happens a lot in practice.
Right, right. And it was just a very interesting case all the way around. This was an interesting, difficult case.
Yeah, exactly. It's not one I want to see. Because again, it's an uncommon cancer. But in the moment, what I'm seeing is I've dealt with drain tracts from infections for months before, many months before. But I don't see a failure here. And that's the question, is do we see a statute violation? I see, things we could have done different, but every case we can see that, everything we do in life, we should always be able to look back and say, oh, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. But does that mean you did something wrong?
Yeah.
If you did anything wrong, my concern was the communication. And when we went from an intern to somebody supervising the case, is the communication go through the right channels, and to see that this dog was following a little more closely or other procedures. So it's not a progression of the case. I think that was they did the best they could. They thought they were dealing with infection and something bizarre showed up at the end. I mean, what do you do in a case like that? But as we heard, communication to me was lacking in that, those pictures, that looks bad. It's not getting better. We have negative culture results. What's going on? Let's get this dog back in. Well, maybe that was partially a responsibility of the complainant at that point.
And we do have some questions there, because I mean we offered one antibiotic and another antibiotic was already in hand, so we used that one instead. So I mean there's definitely communication in there.
Yeah.
Is there a failure of communication? Again, maybe it could be better, but I'm not seeing that the standard of violation. So though it's a difficult case and a sad case and a sad outcome, I would make a motion to dismiss it for violation.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 10, case 24146, regarding Kelly Baxter, BBM. Tracy, could you go ahead and read them from me?
Yes. Case 24146, the complainant is Jamie Miller. The respondent is Kelly Baxter, BBM. On April 28, 2024, Tiger, a 1.5-year-old male German Shepherd, was presented to respondent due to non-weight bearing on the right front leg. Complainant reported that she had administered to the dog a baby aspirin prior to presentation. Respondent evaluated the dog and recommended diagnostics. Complainant declined due to financial constraints. Respondent offered an injection of pain management and medications to control pain at home. Complainant approved. Respondent reminded the pet owner to not start the NSAID for 48 hours after discharge due to administration of the baby aspirin earlier. The dog was administered an injection of hydromorphone and discharged with carbapenem and gabapentin. Complainant stated the dog collapsed after receiving the injection of hydromorphone and was never able to rise. Complainant believes the dog was overdosed due to staff documenting the dog's weight incorrectly. The dog died 1 week later of kidney failure. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And the committee also had concerns regarding the responsible veterinarian for the premises and asked the board consider opening an investigation regarding that.
We do have the complainant present, Jamie Miller.
I have David Vincent with me. He was present as well. Is he allowed to sit up front to validate, or is his presence sufficient? We went together with the dog. I was not alone.
Do you want to hear from her first and then decide if you need to hear from her? Yeah, that's fine. If you can sit with you if you'd like. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Jamie Miller.
And you have up to 5 minutes to address the board with any new information. We do have everything that you have submitted.
Okay, 300 seconds, here I go. 1.5 years, very healthy, athletic dog, Schutz in training. We're minimalist when it comes to veterinary care. We don't like to overreact, but we are very thorough. He had had all of his shots, rabies. Rabies was taken care of by Dr. Hunt, and his most recent visit to Dr. Hunt was for flight clearance for his tracking training. He was 1.5 years old. He was, as I said, an absolute athlete. He was also a companion dog recommended by a physician for Dave, who is a military veteran. He was also the friend of whom I was the primary caregiver of, a 96-year-old woman living with us, David's mother. So whenever he presented to us early Sunday morning, upon wakening, crying that he didn't want to wait there, I put it together that he might have a shard of metal in his paw. I said, Dave, this is definitely something we need to get dealt with. We can't leave it fester. Okay, so this keeps getting reiterated about me having financial constraints. When you are the primary caregiver of an elder who does not have finances to take care of herself, it is an undue burden. The dog was my life savings with her because he was her friend. For safety measures and for prudence to the dog, we proceeded to take him where we had gone before, to this emergency vet. Evidence of my diligence to dog care, the prior dog, Tiger, was the replacement of co-pilot, had gone to this vet when they felt that it was a brain tumor. We proceeded, took him to a veterinary neurologist, we paid for an MRI, and we dealt with things. We are very thorough people, but we're also prudent. We don't believe in over-provision of medicine. Okay, upon an ER situation, we walk in. We had his training harness on him to keep everything appropriate in training, keep him positive toward vets. It's his job. He limped in. I held his harness. He was on three legs. He was calm. He was friendly. He was not panting. He was not upset. They did the intake. I identified myself. I identified Dr. Hunt. They took us back rather quickly. It was Sunday morning. It was not busy. Dr. Baxter and a technician, well, the technician took our intake. I didn't get to see anything in writing. They're a paperless institution. So I couldn't catch that she was inaccurately documenting. Before we walked in the door, I'm standing there. I'm the one that commanded Tiger to stand on the scale. It was 74 pounds. It read pounds. We go into the room. Dr. Baxter eventually enters. I don't know that she's operating off of inaccurate information. And I said, you know what, go ahead and muzzle him. He was 1.5 years old. I knew he was in pain. Didn't want to risk him having a negative in his history. She thanked me, muzzled him, checked him, and she says, there's nothing wrong with the paw. I breathe a sigh of relief. She says, it's in the shoulder, probably pan. And I go, growing pains, that's usually in the long bones, isn't it? Oh, no, you're wrong. She's very, very terse, very curt. Okay, fine, you're the doctor. And I just stay calm about it. And she goes, okay, well, you know, we could be concerned for valley fever, but I think it's growing pains. She exits the room. I never see her again. The tech returns with an iPad. The tech, it'll be $1,600. We'd like to check for valley fever, and we'd like to do a couple of x-rays and some blood work. Dave immediately boldly says, no. He said, we've mission accomplished. This is no longer an emergency. That is way too much. We're going to take him to our vet. We have a vet. I mean, we're diligent people. Believe me, we're going to follow through. We were treated very snarkily because they expected us just to go along with their program. Mission accomplished. We don't have a shard. The dog is safe to be around the 96-year-old. Okay, so from there, she leaves the room. She returns. Well, the vet would like to give him something at least to make him more comfortable, and we'll give you some prescriptions. And by the way, here's some low-cost resources for you. Nobody looked at my history, that I'm willing to move ahead when it is necessary. An MRI was no joke. But that's beside the point. I just kind of dismissed her little snarky comments. And okay, comfort measures, okay, I sign it off. I don't get to see anything in writing. She leaves. She returns with another technician. And they muzzle Tiger. Dave immediately, upon seeing the hypodermic needle, which I brought a model, and I'm not going to carry hypodermics because I now work for school district. This is a model. I got this from when I used to have horses. This is the size of the needle for hydrocodone. Okay, and I said, well, what's in that? Well, you know, like hydrocodone. Okay, wait a minute. I said, I don't have the pharmacia. I said, I'm not a nurse, I'm not a veterinarian. Hydrocodone, what's the derivative? Is it morphine? Is it codeine? I remember specifically, you know, like hydrocodone.
And Dave's going, that's too much, that's too much. I'd never give a horse that much. They did not say, this is a narcotic, concentrated morphine. Nothing. Nothing said. Oh, you know, like hydrocodone, it's what the vet ordered. You know, I'm tired. I'm up all night. I'm convalescing. Dave's tired. We should be able to trust these people. They muzzled him. They injected him, and he dropped like a euthanized horse. His jaw clamped. He was gasping agonally for breath, foam coming out of his mouth. We're going, oh, buddy. Oh, I mean, you know, your brain clicks into, now you've got to comfort the patient on the floor. Oh, this is perfectly normal. Perfect. You got two little chickies. This is perfectly normal. And I'm sitting there like, what have you just done? Oh, my God. You know, but I'm just like, I'm kind of like, I'm in shock myself. And I'm just trying to comfort him. Never asked me when his last meal was. No concern of aspiration risk. Perfectly normal, perfectly normal. And then they leave. And we're just in there and we're just petting him. Oh, buddy, we'll get you home, buddy. You're going to be okay. And I'm like, Dave's going, that was way too much. That was way too much. Then the little girl enters the room again with her iPad. Oh, we just need you to sign so you can leave. Bad news is it's going to cost a little more, but the good news is not very much. We had to double dose him because he is so big. You know he's 74 kilos. Kilos. Okay, that's imperial. Okay, but 74 kilos. Now, this is all status post because, mind you, they hand me nothing in writing. I've got a dog on the floor. I'm like in my own, you know, owner triage. Hydrocodone. I started to, like, do some math last night. It made me sick and disturbed. 2 inches it was filled to. I could do this on a lie detector. That's significant hydrocodone. Where's the VAT? Where's the checks and balances? Who is documenting that significant amount being gone from the VAT? That's significant. And it was the, it was the diameter of nickel to 2 inches. So I went out and I looked for props last night because there's nothing like a visual. Here's my nickel, and it was to 2 inches. It was a clear substance.
Thank you so much. We gave you extra time to make sure you could present that, and so we appreciate that. We'll go and have
you
step back. And then Kelly Baxter, DVM, just monitoring?
Yes, just monitoring.
Thank you. Dr. Wright, you're the lead.
Yes, thank you. So, for one, I'm sorry for your loss. And there's definitely a lot of, sounds like a confusion kind of around everything and going on here and what's happened, why did this patient pass away, what's going on, can these medications cause these problems, what's happening? When we're looking at this and we have a younger German Shepherd, I know there's some questions about the weight, but when I look at the medical records and the medications that are used, I don't see questions in that regard, so I don't know where we're getting any confusion in the weight. There might have been comment of a 74 kilograms, but everything calculation-wise looks like it was based off of the weight that was in the medical record. So I think that's a communication thing. I don't know what happened there, but there's nothing that I'm seeing that's showing any kind of medical violation or record issue going on there. When I look at the drugs and see what's going on, again, calculating based off of the weight with the hydromorphone, it sounds like there's some confusion with hydrocodone, which is a completely different drug. It's in the same class of drugs, but it's very different. Concentrations are different, doses are different. Even response is different. Hydrocodone doesn't work all that great in animals. Hydromorphone is a good drug based on a 2 milligram per mil vial concentration. I don't see a problem with that drug concentration. We can have a profound response to these medications, but I don't see an overdose that was put on there. I do see an issue with the volume.
Is someone calling?
Someone was calling me.
Okay. I do see that there was a question about 2 mils adding another 0.5 mils in there. But again, calculating that, I don't see a problem with the actual calculated dosage. Like I said, response can be profound. And the client did call back with concerns about that response, and we'll discuss that. With that, though, that's still not an issue that tends to cause kidney failure. Hydromorphone is not a kidney-related drug that's going to cause that issue, so I can't even tie those together. We gave a baby aspirin dose. That's pretty darn low dose. I mean, that's not going to do anything to a patient this size. But aspirin is a drug that we do not use in veterinary medicine very commonly, or at least in dogs very commonly, because over 70% of dogs tend to get ulcers in their stomach from the use of that over a couple doses. uses. So that's one that has been a historic drug, but we have much better drugs now, and we don't even recommend that in most cases other than certain diseases where we're trying to deal with, like, coagulation issues. Even with that carprofen, you can get kidney problems with that, but I'm not going to see that issue going on there. Usually, if you're going to see an acute problem, it's a liver problem. So I'm not seeing, unfortunately, or I shouldn't say unfortunately, I'm not seeing problems with this case. It's a very unfortunate case, but I'm not seeing issues with the doctor there. Now, coming to communication, that's kind of where we have other questions there. Is there any kind of problem there? Because when the client did call back, the respondent was already gone, and so tell the by other staff. And was this relayed properly? What happened there? That's kind of the question that way. But when I'm looking at the case being handled medically, I don't see an overdose problem. I don't see anything there. I don't see anything that would lead me to believe that this would cause over kidney failure. But that is a potential side effect from any NSAID medication, be it aspirin or ibuprofen. So I definitely would love opinions on the communication issues, and is there any kind of problems with the after the patient client, or I'm sorry, the respondent left?
I do have concerns about the communication and how that was handled with the dog some 8 hours after this was given and was told that's fine. There are communication issues. But I do have...
Was it ever clear to you whether that... Because it sounds like a technician might have been answering these
without consulting with
a veterinarian. Because this veterinarian is gone. Like,
yes,
not.
That's the other concern.
I think that's my bigger concern. Is at this practice, are technicians just given the free reign to answer questions and maybe overstretch it a little bit? I don't know. I think that's my bigger concern.
I wanted to go back to the to what happened in that exam room. The dose, first of all, would be appropriate for a pre-med, and at a dose of 0.15 mg per kg, that would be your pre-med dose, and the reaction would be what you might expect to go down. That's what you do in a pre-med. For analgesia, if you chose to use hydromorphone for that purpose, it should be more of a 0.05 range. Not 0.15.
Yeah, I don't think it's a real drug to use.
And it's not. And I do have questions about the decision to use that drug. We can talk about the NSAIDs and the aspirin and all of lots of questions there. Next question: why IV? Mm-hmm. Why did we give this drug? Two technicians give this drug IV. This is like we're doing an anesthetic procedure in the exam room. The kilogram thing, I think that was just someone misspeaking and saying kilograms when you know, saying pounds when you had kilograms or vice versa. The volume, the visual volume, was because it was 2 milligrams per mil. And so that's why a volume, 2, 2.5. I don't have any problems there. But to make an assessment, come back, and I think we need to give something. Why hydromorphone? Why IV? Why by technicians without a doctor involved or then came back to check on the dog? Declining the blood work doesn't bother me because they didn't have an emergency. So at that point, I don't have any problem going to your regular vet at that point. So I have lots of questions. I have concern when a limping dog comes in and then is to have his paw assessed or his leg assessed and then goes out on a stretcher. There was no explanation by the respondent to the complaint. I'm going to give an opioid. It's going to be very sedating. There was nothing like that. The text came in and gave it IV for some reason, and the dog hit the floor. I agree with you totally. I can't correlate any of this with kidney failure. But my concern is what happened in that room. I'd like to know if the hospital has 10 milligram per mil hydromorphone, 2.5 cc's of that. We'll drop him, even if he was a horse. So, you know, we have the ampules versus the bottle. Lots of questions. So I would move to a formal because of these questions.
If we move to a formal, would we also want to open a case against a responsible vet? Because I
yes.
feel like a lot of this, yeah. and it would be better to hear those together.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with that. Like I said, the question about the hydromorphone, yeah, I wouldn't have used that drug in an outpatient, but I don't think it's necessarily wrong. I mean, it's a very safe drug in that regard. Giving it IV, I also have no problems with that. I prefer IV because it does tend to cause some nausea signs because it hits them quicker, whereas the sub-Q IM does tend to cause the vomiting and the salivation and all the nastiness. So, and I do see in the response that side effects were discussed, at least according to one side. So again, this is a
yeah.
mind thing. So, and I can definitely see that there's a lot of confusion, a lot of issues going on there. So I do agree. I probably would have chosen different drugs, maybe different concentrations, but they are within the safe ranges, and it's not a problem. IV, also, the other concern I have is it's going to give you about 2 to 4 hours of pain control, not usually more than that. And again, we call back later, still having issues, and it goes back to communication. So yeah, could we have picked different drugs? Yes, but I still see it
so
as a
violation. Was the idea we'll give this opioid and then wait for a washout of the aspirin, and then we can move to an NSAID. I think that was kind of the plan.
Yeah,
like you said, we're only going to get 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So how is that even going to help? And then we give it in a pre-med dose IV and drop the dog in the exam.
Yeah, so carry-on's not a surprise.
No.
Yeah, so exactly.
No.
So that's also there.
So we have a motion for an informed. We have a second.
The motion was?
Did we
ask
for the motion?
Yes.
Dr.
Osmond,
I
think you're
going
to
be
actually
okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will. So, in this case, I would make a motion to move to
second.
Do we need to add the...
Do we add that, or is that a second motion?
Second
motion.
Second motion, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I have a motion and a second to move to informal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Second motion.
So I'll make a motion to complaint or complaint against the premise license holder for communication issues in the case.
Yeah. Madam Chair, and Tracy, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I've seen that Alexanne Weinsterl.
Yes.
Is the responsible.
That's correct. Yes.
I would second that if we can also add to that to try and time these cases however you guys need to. So if it skips next month for this one because we're waiting on the complaint
right.
to get through the process, it would be better if there's
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a motion and a second to open a complaint against the responsible veterinarian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 1, case 24130 regarding Lacey Escobarte Cat DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front list?
Yes, case 24130, the complainant is Gina Massetti, the respondent is Lacey Escobarte Cat DVM. April 21st, 2023, Junior, a 5 to 6 year old male Labrador mix, was presented to respondent due to scratching and hair loss. Complainant Lydia of the dog had fleas, however, respondent could not find evidence of fleas or ticks. Respondent wrote a prescription for a flea tick medication. She stated she chose Provocto due to complainant's other dog that respondent had also examined that day, having mange. Complainant had issue with the cost of the product, therefore respondent prescribed a 12-week dose. Respondent provided relief services at the premises. Her last day working at the premises was 4/21/23, the day she saw complainant and her pets. On April 3rd, 2024, complainant attempted to fill the written prescription respondent provided almost a year later. Since there were no instructions on the prescription, the pharmacy called the premises to confirm medication directions. The premises denied the prescription being filled as the dog was due for an exam. According to respondent, the hospital protocol is that a current exam is on file to dispense for refillable medications. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. So Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so essentially in this case, again, the complainant took the dog in. She was concerned that the dog had fleas and she wanted medication for such. And there was some question as to how the conversation went in the room, and the complainant felt that the respondent was pushing her to get the product at the clinic and had to fight in order to get a prescription. Ultimately, a prescription was written and given to the owner. The owner waited almost a year to fill it, which obviously there was some disconnect there. She was concerned about the fleas. In getting more information from the clinic and the respondent, the clinic doesn't even carry the flea medication, so there really couldn't have been an argument about getting that. It was written, the respondent actually doesn't even work at the clinic. She was relieving that day. That was the last day she worked at that clinic, so she couldn't have even been involved in any back and forth, or the request for her to come in, to get an exam to refill it. So I was going to go along with the IC recommendation and dismiss the violation.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 2, case 24131, regarding Scott Fiskin, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front one?
Yes. Case 24131, the complainant is Bambi Hartman, the respondent is Scott Fiskin, DVM. On May 23, 2023, Val, an 8-month-old female Great Dane, was presented to respond to Forest Bane procedure. Respondent noted blood seeping from a lesion on the spleen that he described as a chronic lesion. The bleeding could not be stopped, therefore an emergency splenectomy was performed. The dog recovered, but declined and arrested. Respondent resuscitated the dog and notified the pet owner that the dog needed to be transferred to an emergency facility for continued care. The dog was picked up and transferred to Animal Medical and Surgical Center. Diagnostics and treatments were performed. It was determined the dog was actively bleeding in the abdomen. Due to financial constraints, the dog was humanely euthanized. The dog and the spleen were submitted to Midwestern University for a post-mortem evaluation. The pathologist determined that the dog's spleen was bleeding, likely due to a splenic trauma during the spay. Then, when the splenectomy was performed, the splenic artery was not ligated appropriately, which caused continued bleeding into the abdomen. The pet owner stated she was not notified of the splenectomy until approximately 3 hours after surgery was performed. Additionally, respondent did not disclose that the dog had arrested and CPR was performed while in his care. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. And seconded, the board fined ARS 3222.32.11 gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in unnecessary death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices due to not performing a splenectomy correctly by not ligating an artery and vein resulting in the dog bleeding to the point where she required humane euthanasia. ARS 3220-3212, as it relates to R311-5011, failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures for reporting that an ovarian hysterectomy was performed on the dog when it was not. According to the necropsy report, the dog's uterus was not removed. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. And I believe we have the complaint from Bambi Hartman. Come forth.
Yeah.
Can you please state your name for the record?
Bambi Hartman.
Sorry for your loss. You have up to 5 minutes to present any new information to the board.
Okay. First off, I want to thank all of you for taking your time today to work on this. I am in total agreement with what the investigative committee is recommending to you guys. What I would like to see happen is I have concerns that this will continue if something seriously is not done with this. I would ideally like to see this gentleman lose his license over this. the dog was 6 months old. She was healthy. And he killed her. He straight up killed her. He lied about it. He informed us that she was not bleeding whenever he closed her up. That whenever we transported her, we must have jostled her and popped a stitch, which was not even the case because he never even ligated the artery. He had clamped it. He knew it was bleeding, and he never ligated it. He just sewed her up and let her bleed to death. And then he turned around and he not only lied to me and, at the time, my foster coordinator, he lied to both of us about it, and we recorded him in the cold conversation. But he also lied on all of his paperwork. We weren't notified properly, and because of his negligence, she's deceased. He has not offered to help pay any of the medical bills that were incurred. He's not done anything as far as on an apologetic manner. He did contact his malpractice insurance company, who reached out to me asking for a settlement, and I didn't do anything. I told him I wanted to deal with you guys first before I even went anywhere close to that. So ideally, I was just going to lose his license because I don't want this happening to anybody else or any other dog. Sorry.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I'm going to step back.
Thank you.
Scott, is Dan Vivian present?
Through counsel, David Stoll, Greenberg, Dr. Diskin. I'll be brief. I too express my condolences for your loss. Honestly, it's kind of difficult for us to respond to the investigative committee's recommendations in this case because they're premised on the necropsy report, which neither Dr. Diskin nor I have seen. We requested a copy of it from the board, but because this is in the investigative stage, we were told that we're not entitled to it, and I understand that. So basically, Dr. Diskin instructed me to simply monitor your review of this case today. Thanks.
Okay. Dr. James, you are the lead.
I was going to offer a consent agreement because I don't think that there is much in this case that is unclear to me. Very rarely do we actually have a necropsy that tells us exactly kind of what happened. But since we haven't had an opportunity to see the necropsy and to respond to it, I think in the case of 24131, I'd make a motion to move it to informal.
Second.
Okay. Lots of seconds, so go ahead and vote. All those in favor of moving to informal?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Section 2, number 4, case 24136, regarding Cora Zenko DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes. Case 24136, the complainant is Jim S. Chan, the respondent is Cora Zenko, DVF. On April 16, 2024, Mikey, a 6-year-old male poodle, was presented to respondent's associate for a new procedure. The procedure was performed. While in recovery, a staff member held the dog on his back and flopped the dog's head back and forth, while another staff member videoed the activity. The video was posted on the staff member's social media page. Respondent was made aware of the incident. She placed a written warning in her personal file and implemented new hospital policies prohibiting staff from having cell phones on them while working. Respondent is the responsible veteran for the premises. In the died due to a mishandling of a patient by staff after a surgical procedure was performed. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. No complaint, Cora Zinko, DVM, but Mr. Stoll, are you monitoring?
I have a statement.
Okay, thank you.
David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Zinko. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to respond to the investigative committee's recommendations in this case. As you know, this case does not involve any veterinary medical care nor any conduct on the part of my client, Dr. Zinko. The complaint involves a social media video that was taken by one of the practice's employees, an unlicensed technician. If you listen to the discussion of this case, the investigative committee was very conflicted as to whether or not there was any type of violation in this case, because Dr. Zinko and the practice did have policies and procedures in place as to the appropriate ways to handle patients and a specific policy against video recording of any patients without the owner's consent. Unfortunately, an otherwise experienced and very valued technician chose to violate those policies in this case. This was not Dr. Zenko's fault, and we therefore feel that this complaint against her should be dismissed with no violation. Also, it should be noted that since this video came to light, the subject employee was reprimanded and disciplined for the manner in which she handled this patient and for the video recording, both of which were again in violation of existing policies and procedures that Dr. Zinko implemented at her practice. Furthermore, Dr. Zinko has taken corrective action since this incident by implementing a new policy that precludes any employees from possessing their personal cell phones during working hours, except in cases where employees need to maintain communications with their children. And again, there were policies in place, and they remain in place today, for appropriate methods for handling pets. In light of the foregoing, we ask that this complaint be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Solomon, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I concur with the findings of the investigative committee. A corrective action has been taken, but that doesn't undo the damage that was done. One thing I was concerned about, but the investigative committee concluded that this was not abusive treatment of the animal. So that alleviated that concern there. But I think it's very unfortunate. It's extremely unprofessional. Neither tech was or CBTs, so in that case, it's the responsible veterinarian, which I believe is Dr. Zinko. Can you confirm that, Tracy?
Yes, she is.
Okay, thanks. And in that case, I'd like to offer a consent agreement, finding that violation is recommended by the. We have to do that first, right? Find the violation. Okay. I move we find a violation of ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to AAC R311-5011, failure to provide courteous treatment of an animal due to the mishandling of the patient by staff after a surgical procedure was performed.
I'll second that. I agree. Social media is a scourge of our current generation. So many people in trouble, people have to be smarter about it, and these kind of things will continue to happen, people continue to be stupid.
Yes.
So I concur completely with this CBT violation. We need to start sending the answers home that stop doing this stuff.
I would add one thing. We've all had patients post anesthesia, either before the tube's taken out or after the tube, that all of a sudden made very sometimes almost violent, wake right up,
yeah.
Jerk.
Yeah.
And if you're holding a dog like this, and that happens, that could be an injury. It wasn't just silliness.
Yeah.
There could have been an injury to this dog. We've all had dogs do that. So.
I'm in complete opposite, shockingly. I guess my concern here is, these responsible veterinarians, as we've had recently discussed multiple times, are not veterinarians that are necessarily, they're not required to be on site. They often are responsible vets for more than one location. Their job is to make sure that policies and procedures are in place and that action is taken when it's supposed to.
And I feel agreeingly in its entirety with Dr. Wright about social media. But what I would say is that was a decision that was made by two technicians unrelated to this responsible vet and against policy. The policy was there. She, as a responsible vet, she did her job to make sure the policy was in place to protect against this. And when she found out about this, she took action. There is no way a responsible vet can be responsible for bad decisions that technicians make. And if we're going to start going down that path, I think we're going to have a lot of veterinarians that are like, I'm not going to be the responsible vet. And now you're not going to have responsible vets for practices. And that is not what we want to have, because this veterinarian did exactly what we asked our responsible vets to do. She set a policy, it was in place, it was disregarded, and they were held accountable. Like, I don't see where this responsible vet
is. But that's part of being the responsible veterinarian, is that you are responsible for all of your non-licensed
people. Yes. Well, you're responsible.
This is a human nurse, who right. 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 Nurse with the CBT.
Right.
If this is a non-licensed, we have to go after the vet.
I disagree. I think we're blurring that, because I think the responsibility, if that were the case, then our statutes would have to say, it's not. If that were the case, our statutes would have to say the responsible vet has to be there at every hour of the clinic opening, because otherwise they can't control this. You cannot control what that technician is going to do or not do when they violate a policy that you put in place. It would be totally different if there was no policy there. It would be totally different if they had ignored this and not done anything about it. It would be totally different if she was there and witnessed it and allowed it to happen. But this is saying that you're supposed to be able to control something that you're not present for, and that's not even humanly possible. Like, we're asking them to be superhuman and be able to do things
they
can't
do. We're asking them to be dealing with these situations. This person apparently thought that was okay, and typically that kind of stuff doesn't, you don't get caught the first time you do something. So my guess is this has been a historic thing that's just been ignored. Either way, are responsible. It's a guess. But either way, the guess is not that we're responsible. That we know we're responsible, and the word responsible means you are responsible. So, like I said, this is just one of those things. You have to make sure you hire the right people, and if you see an inkling that's not the right person, get rid of them.
As a parent, I set rules for my children. When my children do things that are wrong and I can't control it, I'm not the one. I think that kids are born to make bad decisions. I think that, no, school does not hold me accountable if they do something in school they're not supposed to do. I don't get kicked out of school. My kids don't get kicked out of school.
We have a motion in a second. So let's vote, and then we'll see if it goes somewhere. Okay, so all those in favor to offer a consent agreement?
For finding a violation.
Finding a violation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay.
How many nays with it?
Two.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and I'd like to make a motion to offer a consent agreement. First, do we have any priors?
There are no priors, but would you like to adopt the investigative committee's findings of fact?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I move we adopt the investigative committee's findings of fact. Can I combine it with the conclusions of law?
Very
separately.
We
already did found the violation, so just adopting the motion to adopt the findings of fact as presented by the investigative committee.
Second.
Okay, motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
4-2 passes.
And I would propose we offer a consent agreement requiring 1 year of probation and a total of 4 hours of CE, two related to respectful, to treatment and communication of owners and pets. And the other two would be on staff management.
The first two, would that be a little too
specific?
Yeah, a little too specific. Yeah, communications.
Okay.
And maybe trying to find something with emphasis on.
on treatment of animals.
Yeah, client interaction and social media issues and so in there and as in this time. I've seen those kind of watching.
Okay. So amended. Okay, so that's it, and no, since there are no priors, no civil penalty.
Second.
So a motion to offer a consent agreement with 4 hours.
1 year probation, 4 hours of CU on those two subjects, and no civil penalty. And if not signed within 30 days, return to employment.
Okay. Second. Sorry, Cassette finished it.
Yeah, okay.
Motion and second to offer a consent agreement. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Sure,
yes, sorry.
Dr. Jean.
Ms.
Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is nay. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Sullivan?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Section 2, number 6, case 24138, regarding Brian Netty at ABM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Case 24138, the complainant is Dina Payne, the respondent is Brian Netty, DBM. On December 29th, 2023, Princess, a 2-year-old female French bulldog, was presented to respondent for a C-section. The procedure was performed and 4 puppies were removed. Later that day, the dog and her 4 pups were discharged. On January 9th, 2024, the dog was presented to Desert Park Veterinary Care due to inappropriate urination. An ultrasound to obtain a urine sample showed an abnormality. A follow-up radiograph was performed and revealed a retained puppy. On January 10th, 2024, the dog underwent surgery to remove the pup and spay the dog. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant present. Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only.
Okay. And Dr. Thompson, you may leave.
I just want to start off by saying I'm so confused by this case. I just, when I read it, and I'm trying to follow it as if I was doing this case, and when you see that this dog went back because it was a pup that was missed, it's hard to figure how that happened. So I was really hoping to have conversation around this case because, in looking at the radiograph of the dog when she went back to the emergency hospital, because I was thinking, well, maybe there was you get breeding at different times, maybe it was a smaller pup, maybe it was in a canal, but it was large. And so I'm just trying to figure out how it's possible to miss that in doing the C-section, especially since there were pups that were removed from both horns, so it wasn't like we just stayed in one. And then there was an interesting piece that was brought to light in that the medical records for the clinic where the original C-section was done marked the dog as a blue merle, and then the dog at the emergency hospital was a white dog. And so that throws a question in, but it's also, in reading that statement, like, it was in the stage of healing, so that dog had a surgery as well, if it was truly a white dog or a different dog. Like, it's just, and the weight is about the same, so you're like, well, maybe it's mostly white with some blue merle patches, and it just depended on how they listed it. So I'm honestly kind of perplexed on how to proceed with this case.
Yes, in this case, the color of the dog, we don't have investigators. We send out there to talk to people and figure out things like that. And I think you outlined pretty well supporting evidence that this was a dog. And then the other question you would go, why?
Right.
Why would you make that accusation? I think the respondent was totally at loss. Very experienced doctor. But it happened, it was a big puppy, it was missed, it didn't move up and down the bird canal, and you checked the bird canal. So, you know, there's a violation here. I'm not sure which, where we would go with this, right. But if this were a lady who went in for a C-section on twins, and we left one, I think that would be malpractice.
And I think that's where it's like, if there's a violation, I'm just not sure which direction. And you know, again, the doctor who did the original surgery, the respondent, he admitted, he's like, I don't know how this possibly could have happened. And I mean, mistakes do happen, right? But that does not excuse.
The car thing is interesting, though, because the one says Merle, the other says white, and then the complaint says black and tan Merle. So, what color is it?
The chameleon.
And how many are there?
I missed the part on that.
Yeah. But that's the thing, though. It's like, right. you have to go to informal and see if you can hear from the complaint and the respondent, because what color is his dog?
Yeah.
That's the only question.
Sometimes this is what the breeding situation. There are multiple bitches, and some of them are bred, you know, close together, mm-hmm. you know, and puppies being whelped. I mean, you can have multiple bitches with puppies and then be confused as to which one had a procedure where. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot.
And I'd love to see if there's no microchip information, because I was like, could we compare microchips? But at the one clinic, it wasn't scanned. I was looking at the x-ray to see if there was even a microchip to, you know.
I also have a concern in addition to the color of the dog, and that is based on currently acceptable practices. And technology is now such an age, I question why no imaging was done, x-ray or anything else.
I don't think follow-up radiographs are really done that commonly, because the only reason you'd be doing that would be, did I miss
right,
it?
Okay. Right.
And you have the uterus in front of you.
Right.
We could argue pre,
yeah.
But that's not standard. I mean, you don't have to do those.
No.
I like to do them. And I believe it did have an ultrasound at one point.
At another clinic.
Yeah. But you can't get numbers. No. You can say there's more than one, but whether it's that kind of thing.
So
but
you
you're
can't
not,
count the spots.
You're not going to get it only in a radiograph.
Okay.
So would it be, is it standard of practice to radiograph this dog prior to a C-section? I don't think so.
I would call standard as best practice. I have it right there, but if I'm leaving something in, I always take an x-ray after, doesn't matter what surgery it is, because I want that proof in case of anything. But again, that's not standard.
It's doctor's.
And then even x-rays, I mean, it can be difficult. It sounds easy. I'll just count spines, but they overlap. They lay on top of each other. It can.
And now you have hair and weird stuff in there.
I usually have two or three people kind of look.
Yeah.
Kind of do a consensus in a big list. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of stuck on is it, and I'm sure you brought up an interesting piece, like are there more? I missed the part about the color of the dog on the actual complaint. So we've got three different color dogs, and so is it ideal to put this to an informal to get information on the dog?
My thought would be is if we're concerned about that it might not be that dog, we have to go to an informal.
Yeah.
If we're satisfied, then it's failure to follow acceptable procedures and not ensuring that you removed all the puppies.
Right. Okay.
But
I think if it's that high of a violation,
what kind of information are we going to get in an informal regarding this color of the dog? If we're going to start with a mistake or a falsehood, are we going to get more information from an informal? Or do we just need to know how this got recorded as a white dog? And how are we going to do that in an